Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, pretty baby, since you left me, I have been feeling oh so blue. I always thought that you would love me. I don't know what I should do. Do do.
A good Saturday evening to each and every one of you. I want to welcome you here to Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. And as always, I'm your host, Maria Wall. And tonight we have a very special guest, Ms. Inez Riley. She is the author of the book Covenant. But before we get into her wonderful, wonderful book, I want to tell you a little bit about this dynamic lady. Ms. Allen is a survivor of domestic violence. She speaks about her experience, and we're going to talk about that a bit because I've been following her for a few weeks now and listening to some of her other interviews. So we're definitely going to touch on that tonight and how she evolved, so to speak, and came to be where she is now. She's been blessed with the gift of writing fiction and nonfiction content to help others work through everyday issues as they relate to matters of the soul. And with that said, I am going to welcome Ms. Inez Riley to the show.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for being here. As I told the listeners, wow, I read the book, Covenant, and we're going to get into that for the listeners again in our call query. Welcome, and welcome to our guests in the chat room. If you have a question or comment, feel free to type it, and I will read it for you on air. And, of course, to any of our callers in the query, if you'd like to ask a question of Ms. Inez, or if you have a comment, of course, press the number 1 on your phone. That will let me know that you would like to speak with Ms. Inez Riley on air, and I will be more than happy to put you on air. Okay. Wow. We spoke briefly before the show started for all of our listeners, and wow, this is a book where it will take you up and down and up and down, but one thing that I can say about the downside is you will not be able to put the book down because it is just that good. But before we get into your book, Covenant, I want to talk a little bit about your past and your experience. And I know that you've had experiences with domestic violence and other issues. And I want to start there or wherever you'd like to start back before that happened. And then we're going to progress up to this moment and how you had come to write such a wow, wonderful book.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, it is amazing how God has created the human body and mind and spirit, and how it is capable of enduring much more sometimes than we think that we can handle. But we are, God has prepared us for the stressors that come into our lives and all of the trauma and all of the circumstances and the trials and the tests. And so everyone who's listening, we are living testimonies to the goodness of the Lord because we're still standing and we're still viable in a time where most there are other people who are out there who just crumble under the attacks that some of us have had to face. And that is one of the things that I am most grateful for. And that is the platform that God has allowed me to stand on, is that there is healing for the broken, for the brokenness that's in our lives. And there's freedom to the things that have trapped us or look to trap us in our lives. And I'm a living testimony to that, you know, as I am a survivor. But more than that, God has called us to be more than conquerors in everything that we face and we endure. And so in my childhood, having been involved in sexual abuse and physical abuse and emotional abuse, you know, it's amazing that God gives us the ability to see what's going on, to understand what's happening if we allow ourselves to step outside of our situation and look at it from a different perspective sometimes, you know. And oftentimes it just takes us that little moment to say, okay, let's see what this looks like, and then let's move on from there. And I bless God for that ability, just like you said. And then I grew up and then married a man who was controlling in a way that came across to other people as love. And we often get ourselves into those situations where someone who wants to control our every move, wants to know where we are at every given moment, what we're doing, who we're with, who, you know, and everything. And those people out there who've been involved in domestic violence of any sort understands that that's one of the telltale signs that the person has the capability of being an abuser, when the control seems to take over everything. And I don't know if that's something that some of your listeners were able to see, even while it was happening, or in hindsight, because God, you know, there's a saying that says hindsight is 20/20. And so that's one of the, I am so grateful for the opportunity to speak healing where everybody can see the hurt and the damage that has happened throughout the course of my life.
And let me go back a bit, because I think that you touched on a good point for our listeners, is the fact, I believe you said, when it maybe in hindsight, they notice those signs of control.
Mm-hmm.
When you noticed some of yours, what were some of the signs that you noticed, whether it was beforehand maybe, or things that you sat back and when you reanalyzed everything, you know, what were some of your signs? Because a lot of times I'm finding that so many people, once they listen to someone else's story, they see just how similar theirs
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the signs that you discovered, whether it be beforehand, during, or after?
Yes, well, most of mine were, I took note of them afterwards. I knew that they were happening, but I did not allow it to register in my brain as abuse. And I think that sometimes that's where we can go awry, because the physical abuse is not always the first sign of abuse when you're talking about domestic violence. It comes slowly and gradually with that emotional abuse and that mental abuse and that controlling aspect. And so one of the things, in hindsight, of course, was like I was mentioning earlier, that I was like, okay, I'm going to a friend of mine's house. And before I could get there, he had already made a phone call and said, is my wife there? Is my wife there? And, you know, and then when I got there, go tell her to call me when she gets there. You know, it was always something I need. It was always, I have to pinpoint your every moment. So,
right.
That, you know, as far as the control is concerned. And, you know, when people look at that And this is one of the things that we, you know, when I talk to young girls and I talk to women who are looking to get back into relationships after they have gotten a divorce or they've freed themselves from a domestic violence scenario, is that you look at the signs that other people will sit and tell you, oh, he loves you so much he couldn't stand to be away from you, so he called so soon. Well, not if I just left my house 5 minutes ago, you know, yeah. And it takes me 15 minutes to get to your house, and then within 15 minutes he's already called and he's already checking up, and then I have to call him again in a 15 minutes time span. There's something going on with that. The fact that he was fine leaving me at home with three children with a car that he took to work that sat at his job for like 10 hours a day while the children and I were at home. So he knew where we were, that there was no place that I was going to where. The bank account in his name only. You know, those kinds of things, those control things where, you know, we can sit and we can justify them away. You know, oh, he's just doing that because of this, or he's just doing that because of that, or she's just doing that because there's female abuse out there as well.
Right.
And so, you know, those were the signs, you know, the fact that, you know, it was just everything that he was just talking to everybody about what was going, what he wanted them to see long before I could say or give any details of what's happening. So everybody knew ahead of time of what my Christmas presents were and what my birthday presents were. So he was making himself to be very big in the eyesight of everybody else. So when I came and I tried to present it to them, they were looking for some sort of extra, and it made it appear that I was less than grateful or less than appreciative because I didn't go over the top of something that they already knew what was going down.
Right. And, you know, that's a good point because I find it so amazing how many people on the outside looking in always have that answer, or they want to prejudge. And when you're going through something like that, you know, you don't want to go to someone else who's going to kick you when you're already being kicked.
Mm-hmm.
But until it happens to them, it's, you know, they just don't see it
mm-hmm.
from your point of view. And, you know, again, he takes the car from you. It's total control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told you that I had my women's group today, and one of the young ladies in there, she had spoken about that and how she was actually kidnapped, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and her parents had to call the police to come and, you know, rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a trend nowadays with especially some of these younger people being
yeah.
in total controlling relationships. And at some of their ages, they have no clue that they're being controlled.
Right, right.
And if we started at a young age, you know, mm-hmm. that vicious cycle may continue into their adulthood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. What's happening is that we have abusers and those whom they abuse raising children. And it's the atmosphere. We're products of our environment. We learn from our experiences. Our truths are based on what we know. And so if we come out of a home where there's some sort of abuse that's going on, and children see that it's something that's acceptable, this is just how stuff is. This is how relationships are. So we're passing down these traits to our children because we're training them that this is acceptable behavior. So if we have an abusive father in the home or an abusive boyfriend that a mother allows to hang around and treat her poorly in front of the children, we have this stuff that's happening. We're teaching our children that this is acceptable. And so then I believe that's one of the reasons why it's so prevalent now in a day where you have teenagers that are in abusive relationships. And we're talking about 13, 14, 15-year-old girls and boys who are living these lives of torture because that's what they know. That's their ideal of a relationship. And we have wounded people rearing children who are wounded and who wound other people.
Exactly. And that, you know, I believe that you hit the nail on the head, because this is getting worse. I hear it more and more from young people. And in the same breath, I think that let's move a little bit forward, because so many times I come across people, not just women, but men as well, who are still trying to convince themselves why they should not move on just yet.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, 1 year has passed, and then another year has passed, and it's getting progressively worse. But, you know, when did you decide that enough was enough? Because so many people that I'm coming across have 27 million excuses as to why they stay from 1 year to the next.
Mm-hmm. Well, it took me from the first time, I allowed the control to remain. It was just how things were. And oftentimes the control was subtle to the outside person. So I was saying to myself that this is not something that the kids are learning, because the control happens just between him and I. And so I convinced myself that, okay, it was fine that he had the car, if that was what he needed to do. It was fine if he wanted to go out and, you know, and do things and I stayed home. And that was fine, because that was all a part for me of being a submissive wife. And I think we go into the role of being submissive, and we take it completely out of context. And because we have no real idea of what being submissive is, we take it overboard, or we define it ourselves. And so, you know, so the control is like, it's fine, it doesn't matter. I realized early on that my opinion did not matter to him, and I was okay with that. And one of the reasons why I was okay with it was because in my childhood, my opinion didn't matter. It's just how stuff went, so it was fine. I learned how to deal with people putting their stuff on me, and it being, and I'm willingly accepting it. So I don't place any blame on my ex-husband at the time for the role that I allowed to happen for me. But when, you know, then it went, when his control seemed to get a little, he felt like his control was not exactly where it should be. I was desiring to go back into the workplace after my children had been, all of them were in school. I started trying to have outside friends. And when he felt like his control, like he couldn't control, and it wasn't just me, he wanted to be able to control everybody who was associated with me. And that's how he did that, by speaking to them more than I spoke to them, and creating these scenarios in their head, so that whenever if I tried to say anything, it sounded differently. And it, you know, somebody said you can't prove a negative. And so it's difficult to sit there and say, well, this is not what's going on, when he's painted this great picture to them outside from where I was, from, you know, outside of our hanging out together. And so then when it escalated further, and then he hit me for the first time, I was like, whew, okay, I don't even know what really happened, because my mind, for some reason, my mind could not register it. And so there were several other issues. But, again, I had just gone back to work. I had three small children. Although they were in school, they were still all in elementary school. They were small, you know, school-age children. And I had no history of anything. I had never had my own apartment. I didn't have a bank account. I didn't have – so when it was time for me to try to leave, there was no place for me to go. And I did not want to take my girls into a shelter. And so I stayed until I couldn't stay anymore. And when that happened, it was just, everything had just escalated. He was trying to snatch my kids into the house and then lock me out of the house and no, you can't come back in anymore. And it had escalated to the point where the police are now involved and they're coming in. And and had it not been for a friend of mine who said, you know what, you guys can come stay with me. And I was like, okay. And, you know, restraining orders were put into place, so at least I knew I had 24 to 48 hours to pack up as much of the stuff that I could pack up and of our clothes, and then we could leave and be gone by the time he was free to come back into his home.
Right.
And so that's how, you know, the whole scenario of me leaving actually happened.
And it's, you know, once again, I've heard that more than once, and a lot of people do use the excuse that, you know, they have nowhere to go. They're mm-hmm. not used to having their own. And I think that one of the things that most women and or men should always have is have your own.
Mm-hmm.
Have your own accounts, have your own means of transportation that's reliable, that you can get to all hours of the day, you know, and night.
Mm-hmm.
And but so many people, I believe that, you know, some of us marry for love, while others marry for material items.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem. And with media and videos and things like that, they're glorifying the material aspect while they're minimalizing the human aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of these videos out here that young people watch today, the fellows are rich and usually quite unattractive. And, mm-hmm. you know, the women are hoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do whatever they want to them. And the parents mm-hmm. allow the children to watch these videos.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you know, their small minds are still developing. So mm-hmm. they think that it is normal. And we have a comment in the chat room from Empowered Women. Empowered Women states, "We women need to teach our children to have their own. It's very important. I'm very proud of this woman. Thank you for sharing."
Yeah.
So, and you're right, Empowered. The problem is when the children see their mother or their father who didn't have their own, and they come into a relationship to for whatever they can get.
Mm-hmm.
They're assuming that that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know for a fact that I was having a conversation with my daughter-in-law. I believe it was either yesterday or earlier today. She was telling one of her friends who couldn't understand why she didn't allow my grandchildren to watch, you know, the video channels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first and foremost, they're very young.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, they don't need to see the gyrating and the scantily clad women and, you know, the fellows whose pants are like 36 sizes too big.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about them looks like they can walk into corporate America and anyone would ever take them serious. You don't see them sitting in a classroom, getting an education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's true, Empowered Women. They really do. We need to start educating and healing the adults.
Yes.
And then it will trickle down at some point to the children.
Yes. And I think one of the things we really need to teach our children, one of the things that we really need for them to get for themselves is a strong self-image.
Right.
And of and how they can accomplish everything that they set their minds to. Because that sense is not, we're not talking about a sense, we're not talking about pride where it's over the top and fully about themselves, but understand that I am a living being who deserves to be treated, you know, as a, you know, with respect on all points and everywhere. And once we teach our children those things, and then it becomes, then they want what they can get for themselves so that they can be blessings to other people, but also be able to stand and help themselves. And if we, you know, it's not just a matter of us teaching our children how to find, you know, take care of their finances and how much an education is going to be helpful to them as they continue on the road in their lives, but
right.
people with money and education are being abused as well. And so
exactly.
we have to understand that there has to be something that's planted inside of them that lets them know that I am worth being treated with respect. And I think once we get to that point, and if we show them that we feel the same way about ourselves, that we deserve and we will take nothing less than someone respecting us, and then I think that will stave off a lot of things. So if somebody tries to put their hands on them in any form or fashion as far as abuse is concerned, they will understand, I deserve more respect than this. And they will be able to remove, you know, get themselves to a place and not get themselves bound up in a situation where they can't leave.
Right. And I think that it's safe to say to a lot of the adults out here is that it's okay to take off the mask because, you know, I'm sure you can agree that we have found many times that although we think that we're fooling the world, the world actually has a clue. And we're actually only fooling ourselves because, you know, you can paint this wonderful picture to the children and even to yourself when you look in the mirror. But children are very perceptive.
So
they can sense. They may not be able to articulate what they're feeling or seeing, but they know that something is not right. And people know when you don't have time to talk anymore and you're starting to isolate yourself and heaven forbid, you know, you're getting beat up and you're putting on that extra glob of makeup over that black eye. You know, one side of your face is like a beautiful caramel color and the other side is like, whoa, you know. It just doesn't, you're not kidding anyone but yourself. So I think that we need to teach our children and talk to our children. Don't think that they're just little breathing entities that's just there. They're human beings. And sometimes we need to sit them down and explain to them, you know, what's going on, but explain to them as only a parent can do for a child. Because children look to their mommies or their daddies. And they look to them with innocent eyes because to them, you can do no wrong. Even when some of us are doing wrong, we can do no wrong. You know, sometimes it pays to let it go and talk to your children before it's too late. So when you had to get out, you know, you had 2 days or I think it's like 2 or 3 days before you have to get your protection order finalized. How did you explain that to your babies?
Well, one of the things that I did is I started before it escalated to the last final ridiculous moment, when the first initial blow started, you know, happened and the next one happened, I had to sit down and make a plan. And so I could leave. And my plan included sitting my children down and talking to them. And they knew what was going on in the house. They felt the tension. They understood what was happening, you know. And so I sat them down and I said to them, I can't stay in this kind of environment anymore. This is not healthy for me and it's not healthy for you guys. And I'm going to do my best to get us in a place where you will be able to, you know, for their lives to remain as constant as it could. Not try to snatch them out of their schools if I did not have to. Not take them away from their friends if I did not have to. You know, so give them some ease and a sense of, okay, mommy, you know, this is going to be okay. First, they knew what was going on. They knew that I was doing everything that I could so that this would not affect them as harshly as, you know, things could affect them. So they were kind of during the course of everything, they were already aware. So when it was time to leave, they knew we were leaving, even though they didn't know when, but they knew we were leaving. So the transition in that moment was better for them because it had been something that we had been sitting down talking about, you know, and I had at that time finally gotten myself a car. And so the places that I was looking at to try to move them to, we drove there and we looked at the place so that they could see what it was like, see that they had some place that they could play, see that they had other kids around so that they felt comfortable enough that, but by the time it was time to leave, that I was not just snatching them from one thing into this whole completely different atmosphere that they were unaware of.
Right. And, you know, you did a great, well, you said a great point when you really did prepare so that there was no psychological blow to the children, because you made sure that they were going into a calm environment and they had a chance to know what they were going into, and they had, you know, they knew what to expect. So to our listeners, again, welcome to all of our listeners in the chat room. Thank you for joining us here this evening. Our guest is Ms. Inez Riley. She is the author of the book Covenant, and we will be getting into that in about another few minutes. Actually, I'd like for her to speak about several of her books, and then we'll come up to Covenant, because this lady has written quite a few dynamic and powerful books. So in these 2 hours, I want you all to be introduced to her from a very, very in-depth and personal point. So we're going to tell you about quite a few things, because actually I had actually planned on having her on the show last year, but of course things happen. So this year I'm just so glad that she gave us another chance, and she's with us this evening. Again, for our callers and our query, if you'd like to be on air, press the number 1 on your phone, and I will put you on air with Ms. Inez Riley. And, of course, our number is 646-478-4726. To anyone in our chat room, a lot of our guests, we know that as guests you cannot communicate in the chat room, but if you would like to speak with our guests, dial 646-478-4726. Then press the number 1, and that will let me know that you would like to be on air with Ms. Inez Riley. Okay, with that said, so when you left, was there any turning back for you? Because so many people turn back.
Yes, and that, I did not turn back. And that's one of the things that I talk to so many women about, is that when you make the decision, make the decision. And see, a lot of times, you know, we flee on whims, or we're being rash in our moments of going, and we don't have, and because we don't have a plan, and we don't have, we're not thinking correctly in the moment of, you know, when the abuse is happening. And so then we get ourselves into a place, and then we're left out there, and our minds are not free from them. You know, we especially something that we have had sexual relations with, or that we have tied ourselves to with the words of our mouths, you know, that soul tie is so strong that it becomes, sometimes it's impossible when we have not completely made up our mind that we're going to go and we're going to stay gone. Because it will get to this point, and especially, you know, I had been married for 10 years, and so it's not, you know, you don't want to, that's something that you don't want to throw away lightly. It's not something, you know, and so you get yourself to the point where you have to say, I'm going, and it's for my good, and it's for the good of my children. And that's what I, you know, and I had to learn that. I had to learn it, because I was put under so much stress when I left that it would have been easier for me to go back. But if it had not been for God helping me to keep my mind on where, you know, on the destiny that He had for my life at that moment, I probably would have gone back, because the fight was so, so terrible. when I left, and you hear people say it a lot, you know, I lost everything. But when everything really is being lost, you know, for me, and this is one of the things that, and I think this is why I can understand women or men so well, because my ex-husband's family was my family. His sister's mm-hmm. my godmother. I lived with them. So my whole, you know, everything that I was considering a base for myself of some type of stability crumbled the moment I left. So I did not have a family anymore that I could talk to at that time, or that who would take the time to understand, because he was their blood and I was not. And so the fight was so, you know, so I had no family ties at that moment. And then the money issues started coming to place. And then the place that I had gotten for me and my kids, stuff just kept falling off and falling off and falling off and falling off. It was horrible. It was the most horrible moment of my life. I call it the madness, because it just went on for so long. And as you said, we were going to talk about one of the books, and the book that God had me to write was during that time was All Other Ground. And that's a nonfiction book about walking through the valley of the shadow of death.
Mm-hmm.
When stuff is just so bleak and it seems like there's just absolutely nothing left for you, this is a lot of times where women start to turn back. It's, I'm tired of fighting now. And because I'm tired of fighting and I don't have the energy to move on, I might as well just go back. At least I have some place to stay. At least my kids are familiar with it. At least this is what, you know, what's going on. I could, you know, and so we slip back into those old ways. But like I said, if there but for the grace of God, I could have been that one, but I did not. I did not go back.
And one of the things that you spoke about was your book, All Other Ground, which I happen to be holding in my hand right now, and another great book. And you have a section in the back where people can actually write notes
mm-hmm.
or, you know, start a journal to themselves, where you have in your left hand or your right hand a book from someone who has been through that fire, and now, you know, she's come from that tunnel, and she's a survivor, and you've written this book to allow the reader to be able to start writing down those thoughts, start writing down your plan. This book, It's at a size where you can keep it in your purse
mm-hmm.
or close to you. You don't want to leave it lying around where someone can, you know, or your abuser can get to it, especially mm-hmm. if you're keeping notes.
Exactly.
But, you know, they always used to say, you never write in books. Well, this is a book that you can write in.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes everything that becomes a success or great starts with a very good plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't write things down, we may forget or skip a step.
Mm-hmm.
So we really do need to write things down. And if you're feeling good one day, write down what made you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was something outside of that abusive home or that environment, then use that as your catalyst to make you want to move forward to having that good feeling every day.
Right, right.
So, you know, again, the name of the book is All Other Ground. Another one to pick up, of course. We were here to talk about covenant, but
mm-hmm.
again, because this is covenant is not Inez's first book, I'd like to share her books and how they came about with you all, because it would do you no justice to read just one. At least get two or three and keep track, because Inez is going to share with you how to get her books and her website and all of that, so you'll know when each one of her new pieces is released so that you can really get into these words, because these words are powerful. They are outstanding. And again, as I said when we started the show, when I was talking to Inez before the show started, I told her Covenant left me laughing, crying, relating, in shock and awe. And that's where I'm going to leave it, because really that's a book that I really do think you all would enjoy reading, because that had every emotion that I think I've ever experienced. I went through every single emotion when I was reading Covenant. So, you know, once again, you know, just thinking about that and all the little pieces and sections, yeah, it's one of those books that will make you cry, will make you laugh, because there are characters in there that one in particular who we'll talk about soon. She's that type of person that says whatever she feels like saying, and even if you get mad with her, you ever have a friend where you might get mad with them, but you never stay mad with them because they're just so who they are, and you got to love them because they're who they are, and you never know what may come out of their mouth. And you always want to keep them at bay before they embarrass you to know tomorrow. So, but again, we're going to, you know, keep moving up. And I like the flow of this, because tell us a little more about the inspiration for your books, so to speak. We know the inspiration behind all of Other Ground. So tell us a little bit about how the others came about and how you came up to Covenant.
Yes. Well, like I said, All Other Ground was just my journey out of the darkness. And it just talks about how, you know, the different things that we go through, the different stages that we go through when we're trying to make a solid decision for the better for ourselves, especially when we're so used to doing things that are not always the healthiest thing for us. And then How to Taste It at the End of the Day, which is my first fiction novel. It was taste and see that the Lord is good. And if we would really take a hold of that scripture that's in the Bible, then we would understand that we need to grasp and enjoy every moment of our every day. And because tomorrow is not promised to us. And so, and How to Taste It at the End of the Day is just a book about grasping every opportunity, enjoying every good experience that we have, and learn from every bad experience that we have in our lives, or every, you know, the trauma that we go through, and accepting the losses in our lives, not as something that we can regret, but something that we can look back on and see that it is a stepping stone to the greater things that we have in front of us. And so that's pretty much where How to Taste It at the End of the Day came about, and that's how it evolved. And it has some lively characters in it as well, and strong commitment to what we decide to do for ourselves. And someone read that book and decided that it would make a great movie. And so we are now in pre-production stages for that book to be made into a film. So we're having auditions at the end of this month, and we're going to be shooting the film in the summer. And it is due to be released in 2012. And again, amazing.
God is good. And, you know, once again, we had spoken about this earlier, and I've done it on a few shows, but some people don't understand when we say everything happens for a reason, and you had to go through what you had gone through, or there would have never been
right.
and all other ground. Or it may have been in all other ground, but it would not have been this all other ground.
Exactly.
It would have been some other surface, you know, or anything.
Exactly, yes.
You know, and people don't seem to understand that we have to, some of us are here because God deemed us to have certain greatness. It doesn't mean that we have to be rich and wealthy, per se. We're not talking about monetary rich, but we can enrich the lives of everyone we touch.
Exactly.
And, you know, that to me is how God shows us, you know, walk by faith. And for some of you, have a little faith. And that saying, let go and let God. And once that happens, oh, the blessings and the rewards that come back is just unprecedented. And here we are, you know, your book is about to become a movie. You know, that's something that some people would just sit, those who have not found their voices. And had you not found your voice, you could have gone through your experience and never spoke of it again, because a lot of people would like people who have gone through that type of experience to just shut up, sit down. You hate everybody. You hate men because they hurt you. And that's not the case.
Right.
Some people are compelled to tell their stories because that story helps someone else.
Exactly.
And not just one person, and even if it helped one, then job well done.
Exactly. But the Bible tells us that we overcome by the words of our testimony. And so what we endure and what we can get through, and then we can turn around and share that story with somebody else who's going through that, then you have effectively planted a seed. You have effectively touched someone else's life. Like I said, we can enrich other people's lives. And sometimes we get to the point where we think that, you know, what has happened to me doesn't matter and no one cares. But there is somebody out there who needs to hear your voice in order to get through what they're going through right now.
And that's for all of our listeners, both in the call query and our chat room. Again, welcome and thank you so much for joining us here this evening on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. My special guest this evening is Inez Riley. She is the author of the book Covenant and several others. And for those of you who are just joining us after the show is over, please come back and listen to it in its entirety. It should archive approximately 2 to 3 minutes after it ends. So come back and listen to the full show. And, of course, like the show and come back often, because I know that you have a close relationship with Cass Allen. I call her Cass Allen. Her name is Cassandra. But and I, of course, I will be having you back. I hope you already know that, because, yeah, after reading Covenant, yeah, you have still got to come back. And welcome to all of our guests in the chat room. If you have a question or comment, feel free to type it, and I will be more than happy to read it for you on air for our guest, Ms. Inez Riley. Again, all I can say is thank you so much for joining me here this evening, because, again, every week I am in such shock and awe when I get, you know, show feedback, and so many people are being touched and they can relate to something that you're sharing with us this evening. So thank you again for being here. And, you know, it's amazing when, you know, there, I guess it's almost 50-50 or 60-40, where so many people turn back. And I always tell them the story of the pillar of salt. I'm like, you know, you turn back, there's nothing there but destruction. And, you know, sometimes when they turn back, there's no turning back because that's where it ends.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how to tell people. You know, we can say it a million ways, and until, you know, that person is at that point where enough is enough.
Right.
You know, they're not going to be prepared to turn back, to make that move and never look back.
Yes, because the tie is so strong. And we do have to understand that what we need to do in that instance is to ask God to release us from that soul tie, from the thing that our whole being is tied to that person. And so sometimes without us even understanding why we are going back, we go back. And so, you know, once you've heard, you know it's time to go. You just know it. You know this isn't any good. You could feel your self-esteem just draining from you like life's blood. And you know that this is, you know, that the death of you in some form or fashion is coming about. And it's really time for you to go. Once you make that decision and once you step your feet across the threshold of that home, you ask God right in that moment, Father, help me to break that soul tie so that the pull will not be so strong to go back, because we know it is no good. We know it, but there are so many things that happen within our psyche and within our bodies and our spirits that we have to really need some help. God, release me from this soul tie, you know, and then it just makes it easy. And you just say that every day, God, help me to be released from this soul tie, so that you don't turn back once you've made the best decision of your life to leave a situation that is so unhealthy for you. And if you have children, it's equally unhealthy for the children, because it sets up a precedent in them of what to accept and what not to accept. And so, excuse me, I'm sorry. So it's important for us to ask God to release us from that, so that we can turn and make the better decision. Because as you said, with Lot's wife, her heart was still back there. Her heart was still there. And that's why she turned to look back. She longed to be there. It was the same thing with the children of Israel. Once they left Egypt, their hearts, even though they were slaves and in bondage and being, you know, manipulated in all sorts of ways, their hearts were still there because they were afraid of what they had to face and they didn't know what that was. And so it's so important. And it's also important to have somebody that's going to be there to help keep you stabilized and to hold you accountable, so that you can go and talk to them. Listen, I'm feeling weak. I'm having a minute. And he keeps pressing me, and he keeps saying that he's sorry, and he keeps doing these things, and he's talking to the children, and he's doing all of these things. And I just, you know, what can I lose? I should give him another chance. To have somebody there who knows what's going on, who you can call, almost like an AA sponsor, somebody who's been there, who understands that road, who knows how difficult it can be, especially in the first year when you're trying to do it on your own and it's not all peaches and cream and you're really having a hard time. Somebody who's going to be there to be that emotional support and that emotional accountability partner for you, so that it gives you a fresher look. Okay, it's not all about that. I understand, you know, that you're feeling the tug, but let's pray about it. Or somebody says, I'm going to come over and I'm going to, you know, keep you company. I'll stay on the phone with you as long as you need to, so that we can get through this moment. Because it's not easy. And, you know, and people will tell you all the time, just leave. And it's not always that easy just to leave.
Right.
And, you know, because you're so tied up in it, you're invested in it, and you want so much to say, I want my marriage to work. I never thought that once I got married that I'd be divorced. And I felt the same way. I never imagined myself saying that down the line that I'm divorced. And they make you say it over and over again when you, every time you're filling out something, married, single, divorced, separated, widowed, and they make you say it over and over and over again. It's almost like a stigma. And, you know, that's how I felt in my mind. But I'd rather say that I'm divorced than my children to say that I am dead.
That's a powerful point.
And it's important, and that's what we have to take it all the way there, because that's where it's eventually going to end up. Because, you know, that verbal abuse today is going to be physical abuse tomorrow, and then the next day it's just going to go more, because once that thing gets more control, it wants more control. It's an addiction sometimes, and you want more. And so I hit you today, and I get my fill, but then I hit you one time tomorrow, and it doesn't feel the same. So I have to hit you again to get that rush. And the next thing you know, you're full-blown beaten up, and you're in a hospital so they can get the same kind of feeling of that rush of control that happens, to see the fear in your eyes and to see the control. They make themselves so big. It's not going to remain something small and isolated. It's not the nature of that beast. It's that nature of the beast to just get bigger and bigger and require more and more and more from you till you are so drained that you don't have anything else to give and you don't have the fight to leave. And you have to really, you know, think about that.
Yeah, and the fact that for our female listeners especially, we know that we as women, we tend to love. And we love with everything that we have.
Mm-hmm.
When we, for those of us who are or have been married, we take our vows seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We promise to love, honor, and cherish. And in some cases, they did add obey.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we will, I was listening to a show about a week or so ago. It was here, and it was some gentlemen talking, and whoever the expert was, they were speaking about relationships, and he was speaking about how the woman is supposed to be submissive and how she's supposed to fall in place and she's supposed to listen and she's supposed to do this. And, you know, I was getting more and more steamed. I said, you know, you've totally taken everything in scripture and turned it around to your own personal agenda. And so many women are brainwashed to the point where they think, whatever he says, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he chooses to do, I will allow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where so many of us tend to make that, in some cases, fatal mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't believe that God meant for us to be beat down, berated, belittled, and disrespected that way.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, it was an interesting show because he was serious. This is why so many marriages fail, because women are so independent and they're supposed to listen to their husbands and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And if the woman was doing what she was supposed to do, the man wouldn't stray. And it's like, it's so not that cut and dry. A man is going to stray because he wants to. You could be the best wife in the world.
Exactly.
If that's what he wants to do, to stray and or give into temptation, he's going to do it.
Exactly.
And the same way, if you're a good man and your woman wants to go out there and become the whore of Babylon, she's going to do it.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, we need to understand that should be a theme. Enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing when to keep putting one foot in front of the other until you're up the hill and over the other side. So when you do get weak and turn back, there's nothing behind you but a huge hill protecting you from where you were. And so many people do allow the unknown to scare them. And that's why so many people in this world, they live and they die without knowing what their true purpose for being here was, because they become drones. They don't look to the left. They don't look to the right. They look straight ahead. They go to work. They do about face. They look straight ahead. They come back home. They never see who's hurting or crying out for help around them. They never see the beauty in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're going through something like what you had gone through, I know you couldn't feel the warmth of the sun on your face. You didn't see the beauty and the color of those flowers that may have been blooming all around you.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how bright the sun was, your day was gloomy and dim. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, you know, it's so amazing how many people don't realize just how far gone they are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I pray so much for those people out there. And again, we're not just talking to women. We just happen to be women who've experienced, you know,
right,
some things. And it's just, and there's so many people out there whose minds are caged in a particular pattern. And sometimes it's because we've allowed ourselves to be that way, and other times it's because we hear it so often that it has become our reality. And, you know, the Bible tells us that faith comes by hearing, and that's hearing anything, unfortunately, is if you hear a negative enough, the negative will become your positive in your mind. And it's just something that you're going to live out of. And so, you know, that's why it's important for us to be mindful of the things that we allow people to say about us on a continual basis. Because those things eventually begin to take root in us. And whether we say that we're fighting it on the conscious level, if we hear it enough, it's going to become something that we have to deal with later, because it's a subconscious belief for us at that point. And so a lot of times, you know, we have women who are staying and men who are staying in relationships because we have heard so many times that no one else is going to want you. No one else is going to want you. And we hear that enough that we begin to believe it. And so we then become grateful for what we have, as dysfunctional as it is. Why? Because we have allowed ourselves to continue to listen to something that was not the way God intended for us to be. That's why we have people sit there and say those positive affirmations. They are so important, because we need to build our faith up for the things that God says about us over everything else. And so, you know, we so desperately need to go out there and let our voices be heard, and allow ourselves sometimes to speak for those who cannot speak. You know, those people who have been silenced because of the things that they've been hearing and the things that have been happening to them. And so instead of judging them, let's go and ask God how we can empathize with them. Lord, teach us what it is that we need to say to get into that little crack. That little crack is always there, because God says that if somebody tries to close the window or close the door, he's opening one somewhere else. And so, God, how are we going to get into that soul? How are we going to reach that young woman? How are we going to reach that young man? How are we going to reach our family member? How are we going to reach that child? God knows what it would take. He knew what it would take for us. So he knows what it's going to take for somebody else. We should not get to the point where we think that our experiences are just for us to experience. And, phew, I made it past. And so now I'm just going to keep on chucking. I'm going to keep on going. And I'm not going to speak about it anymore. But the thing still hangs around. And if we don't talk, then we can't free somebody else. Our voice is the key to unlock the chains of somebody else's life. And we really need to be able to sit there and don't think that our stuff is just our stuff. Speak about it. Talk about how you've overcome any addiction that you may have had, how you have overcome any abuse situation that you've been in, whether you were the abuser or the one who was being abused. Speak to other people about it. Somebody needs you.
Exactly. And remember that. Somebody, somewhere. And, you know, the beauty of the internet is the fact that you just don't reach people like these local regular radio stations do. You're reaching the world, literally. So you may be helping that individual who's being abused in India or Israel or whatever country. Some countries where you think everybody's beautiful and it's wonderful, they may be getting abused or hurt or having some type of addiction there.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, you're helping someone. It could be, they could be anywhere in the world. So tell your story. Find your voice and keep it.
And keep it.
Find your voice and keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anything or anyone take it away from you. Never.
Exactly.
There's only a few things that you may manage to keep. We lose money. We lose personal items. We lose material items. You keep your faith.
Mm-hmm.
You keep your pride, your dignity, your voice, you know, and you just keep your self-respect. And if you have to get in the mirror every single second of every day or at work and you're having a bad day, you run to the restroom and you look in that mirror and you reaffirm that you deserve to be loved, respected, and you know, walk by faith, because what God has for you is for you, and don't take whatever's happening negative in your life right now and think, I live right and why is God punishing me? God is putting you through this because he's making you stronger to prepare you for your next task, whatever it may be.
Whatever
it may be. And to our guests in the chat room, if you have a question or comment, feel free to type it out, and I will read it for you on air for Ms. Inez Riley. And, of course, welcome to all of our listeners and our switchboard. Again, thank you so much for joining us here this evening. We are about to get into Covenant in a moment, but right now, two things are going to happen. We're going to take a small break, and when we come back, we'll do all of our station identification, and Ms. Riley is going to tell you how to pick up copies of all of her books. So we will be back in about 1 minute or so. Run out, get yourself a nice cup of your favorite beverage, you know, go take care of business, and then we'll see you right back.
Welcome to Healing Through Hurt, Talk Radio's Sunday morning meditation. I'm your host, Maria Wall. I welcome you to join me for just 15 minutes of simple stress relief. Leave what happened last week in the past, and do not allow what may be coming your way to disturb your moment of peace right now. Again, I'd like to welcome you to Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio's Sunday morning meditation. Join me for the next 15 minutes as we experience meditation and stress-relieving exercises.
Okay, welcome back to Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I'm your host, Maria Wall. And as always, this is when we go through all of our how to contact us and all of that good stuff. Of course, here at Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio, you can always reach me at 202-618-2556, or you can email me at mariawall@thewallfoundationinc.org, or if you would like to write to us, our address is P.O. Box 272, Randallstown, Maryland, 21133. And, of course, you can always find us on Facebook under Healing Through Hurt, iTalk Radio. Look us there and join our family, and you can always keep up with all of our activities, what we're doing, where we're going, and everything else that we are into at any given point in time. And our guest this evening is Ms. Inez Riley. She is the author of the book Covenant. And, of course, for those of you who are joining us late, when the show archives, which will be about 2 to 3 minutes after it ends. Feel free to come back and listen to it in its entirety. And before we get into speaking about covenant, Inez, could you tell our listeners how they can, of course, reach you and purchase a copy of all of your wonderful works?
Yes, you can go to my website, and that's InezReilly.com, and that's I-N-E-Z as in zebra, R-E-I-L-L-Y.com. And there you can feel free to read up to 3 chapters, the first 3 chapters of each of the books, so that you can get a feel for what that book is about and see if that's the appropriate thing for the season that you're going through. Because all of the books have a message that's going to enrich your life in some form or another, because that's the goal, of course. We want to bless people as they go along. So you can read the chapters there, and you can also order your books from there as well. There's a link that will take you to Amazon.com where you can order the books, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and order the books. They're also available in e-versions on the Nook or the Kindle. You can get them on iPhones and certain e-readers. So just click on the website, and that's, again, InezReilly.com, or you can reach me on Facebook at Inez.Reilly.
I'm typing it in the chat room for our participants. Oh, wow. Here we go. Without further ado, we are going to spend these last 48 minutes talking about your book, Covenant. And I'm going to let you give us a little synopsis of the book, because, I don't want to give too much away. So you can give us that little... give us that taste, so to speak, of what our readers will be in for.
Well, Covenant is a book that actually speaks about what it is. It's about committed relationships, and whether those relationships are within your family, like your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your grandparents, and the bonds that, you know, of unconditional support and love, and also with friends. And we have one particular family that we focus on, and that's the Lambert family. And they're the familial covenant that we're talking about. And then you have girlfriend covenants, where you have a group of girls who, some of them grew up together, some of them met each other when they were in school, and they developed a union to support and encourage each other through all sorts of things. And they're not all from the same... they're not all from the same background, because we can have a diversity in our covenant relationships and how we are committed to, like when she was talking about one of the characters earlier, her name is Selah, and she does not profess to be a Christian, but she is a free speaker, and she doesn't have any filters, so whatever comes to her mind, it comes out of her mouth. And you have, and again, because they have chosen to be in these relationships with each other, they accept her for who she is, and she accepts them, knowing that they have differences in how they handle themselves and how they do things. But in the long, you know, at the end of the day, they're still friends. And then there's a group of male friends, which sometimes I think that we tend to have our men shun away from those strong brotherhoods and those, you know, camaraderies, and they need that. And we have the men in there again. Their backgrounds are not all the same. They just become friends. They pray for each other. They encourage each other. When one of them slips up or another one slips up, there's somebody there that's always going to be there to support them, get them straight, and get them back in line and get them exactly where they're supposed to be. Then, of course, there's some love going on because that's a part of our lives. That's who we are. That's how God made us. You know, we are beings of love. God is love, and we're created in his image. And so the marriage covenant is shown in the book as well, and and how we can get ourselves into situations, and how every relationship is not always the same. Everybody's commitment level is not always the same, but everybody is committed to making everything work. And that's pretty much what covenant is about.
Let's talk about the Lamberts.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as I believe you said, most families can really relate to the Lamberts.
Yes.
Everyone has a mother, now correct me if I'm wrong,
Celester.
Celester.
Mm-hmm.
Lester. Everyone has a Mama Celester.
Mm-hmm.
And the matriarch of
mm-hmm.
the family, the one who is where the family comes together, the tie that binds, so to speak.
Yes.
And she, when you're at your lowest point, and sometimes we've all been there where we seem like no matter how much we pray, we're not getting the answer that we need.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find our Mama Celester. And when we're done talking to her, it seems like the clouds have cleared and the sun is bright and everything, we see things with such clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, even though we pray and we pray and we pray, we need one of those power prayers,
mm-hmm.
as I call them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that person that seems to have a direct line.
Mm-hmm.
When she calls, there's no, please hold. I'm like, well, how do you get through? But
right.
You know, she reminds me a lot of my great-grandmother.
Mm.
Grandma Lucy, who I miss dearly. But she was that type of person.
Right.
And, you know, she had that special uncanny connection. And she knew when her children were in need or hurting. And she could pray. Ooh, she could
mm-hmm.
pray.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, she's somebody who many people will be able to relate to. And, of course, the book, it deals with a lot of different scenarios that I'm sure every single reader, even those that are in total denial,
mm-hmm.
that happened to them. Nothing in the book happens to them. But they can always point the finger to everyone around them who it's happened to.
Right.
So even those of you living in absolute denial,
right,
will be able to relate to this book. And I love the book because you talked about, what was it, Towson University, Riverwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my stomping grounds. I'm like, oh.
Yes.
So, you know, when you can relate on that level, that just caught me even more.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I must say to all of our listeners, the book left me wanting more. And I'm going to let you pick who were, if you have any, your favorite couple out of the bunch? Who was your favorite couple?
My favorite couple was Preston and Damaris. And I say that because they stood strong in their convictions and they didn't allow outside circumstances to sway them or to mm-hmm. force them into anything that they were not committed to do at the time. And how they both, you know, they were successful and they were in touch with their, with all of their emotions, and they let their emotions be guided by God. And that's one of the things that really, when I was writing the book, I wanted to have at least one couple who did what people say just couldn't be done.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, you can't have two grown people, two very attractive and sensual and passionate people, and you can't have those people develop a relationship that was based on their character and their spirits. And even though they felt connected to each other sexually, they had made a commitment, and they were able to stick to that commitment and allow God to lead them without pushing God further with their constant sense of win, God, win, God, win, God, win, like we do. And sometimes we get ourselves into the position where we're so constantly focused on other people pairing up and coupling up and, like I say now, you know, booing up and, you know, everybody else is getting, and they're consistent and committed to wait on God to make that decision for them.
And I agree. I like that couple. And this is how I was envisioning it in the book. Of course, it started when you first started. We were kind of like getting to the end because you were describing the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you wrote the book, you would think, okay, I'm thinking, you know, in my mind, okay, so many books have these successful people hooking up with successful people, and then they all start to cheat and sleep around with each other. And then the best friends will end up beating up the best friends, and then another best friend will come in and break up the fight before mm-hmm. the other best friend cuts the other best friend and mm-hmm. kills the best friend, and then one ends up in jail.
Exactly.
And, you know, one is an attorney to help get the other friend out of jail. And
yes, but and it's all the same.
Yeah. But the way that you put it all together, with each turn of a page, what you thought may happen, in essence, does not. So it's almost like everything that we expect, everything that we know,
mm-hmm.
your book has turned it upside down and around and flipped it over in a whole new direction. Because it erases all of the expectations and stereotypes mm-hmm. that we see so many times in so many books from so many different authors.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense for our listeners, what I'm saying is, just erase whatever you may think is going to happen, because with the turn of every single page, you will be either pleasantly surprised, proud, or shocked, or disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean in the book. I mean in the characters themselves, because each character brings something extremely different to this story. But I do want to backtrack a little bit, because with Kathleen, she's a Lambert.
Yes.
And when she was talking with Mama Celesta
mm-hmm.
about loss.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something that is a topic that we don't really touch on much, and I think we've only dealt with, you know, bereavement and grief once for the loss of a loved one. So where did that inspiration for you come from?
Well, again, because so much is falling apart in our society,
right,
that we don't focus on the fact that something really good can happen to us. And we don't have to wait for the other shoe to drop, and we don't have to, you know, we don't have to live our lives with our fingers crossed and constantly praying that this is going to last, because we just think that it's just going to fall apart, because that's how America has, that's what they've shown us. And so when dealing with a soulmate, which is what Kathleen had found. She found her soulmate. And when we get into those situations and we experience a loss of whatever magnitude it is,
right,
that we don't just walk away from that undaunted. We are affected. It changes us at our core sometimes. And to some degree, it changes us in a way that we don't want to be changed. But that there is every moment that you know, every morning that you wake up is a reaffirmation that God is saying that I have something more for you. And so when I was dealing with Kathleen in her instance, you know, she faced every moment. But that feeling of emptiness on the inside of her really needed to be addressed.
And, you know, that in itself is something that I've read, of course, a lot of books. And, you know, I thought, wow, out of all of the books that I've read, no one's really had a character who's had to deal with that type of loss in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have not been down that road, but when she was speaking with Mama, Mama Celesta, I could feel her tears rolling down my face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just how well you put this together. I'm so careful with my words because it doesn't matter what I say, I'll end up giving away something good in the book.
Yes, but I think what made me smile when I was writing the book was, first of all, Mother Celesta is mm-hmm. her husband's mom.
Right.
And how she just embraced Kathleen as her own daughter. And she loved her and she handled her as if she were her own. When, you know, she was engrafted into her family in such a way that, you know, it was just that the tie was never going to be broken. And I think what I wanted, you know, what, you know, in the basis form is for us to understand as Christians that that's how God pulled us in.
Right.
And even though we were, you know, not from the children of Israel's line, some of us, God still pulled us in and called us his children. And he teaches us all the same. And that's what I wanted, you know, to the book Covenant, I wanted those relationships and those ties to mimic how God handles us. And I know, like we were talking earlier about being able to share and not being ashamed to share what you experienced, and that was one of the things that Mother Celesta was able to do for Kathleen, was to share from her own experience. And she was not, she did not shy away from you know, her process with her.
Right. And I must tell you that, I had to run and get my notes because I put her down as M-I-L, Celesta, because my daughter-in-law calls me Mill, which is mother-in-law.
Right.
And I call her Dill, which is daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law, right.
And we talk like Kathleen, and that's why I say Mama Celesta talk.
Mm-hmm.
And even on my Facebook page, my daughter-in-law, well, they don't have a daughter-in-law, you know, family tie, but
right.
She's down as my daughter.
Right.
Because I talk to her every day of the week almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to her when I'm riding home from work. I'll talk to her until it's almost time for me to get ready for bed at night. We
mm-hmm.
just talk. And my son is like, how do you all talk for X amount of 1,000 minutes?
Right.
And you know, it's like, what are you talking about? Everything and then absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the odd part is my daughter-in-law's mother's name is Damaris.
So, oh, my goodness.
So... It, you know, the more I read, I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? So that part, you know, I automatically thought, oh, she's Mill. Because I
right.
think that the great-grandson came into the house at one point, and I think he was talking to great-grand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was reading, and I'm putting everybody together. I said, okay, he's the great-grand. So then... she must be the mother, the grandmother of Kathleen. And then when I read further, I figured out, oh, she's Mill.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So that hit home for me. Because I'm mm-hmm. like, okay. You know, so yeah, believe it or not, yeah. You know, it's so amazing how people get what they need from
mm-hmm.
the things that they read. And it was just like, oh, you go, Damaris. She finally got her guy. and then, you know, they kind of reminded me of the Cosbys. You know, I'm like,
aww.
Wonderful people. You come together. You make it work. And you set this example.
Right.
So, you know, each reader will get something different out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But... I'm just sharing with you some of the things that popped in my mind when,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was reading the book and I was actually there walking in the white sands of Aruba.
Oh.
You know, I was yes. right there. Oh, my goodness. I could actually hear the sea.
Mm.
You know, it was, and of course, Salo on the beach. You know,
yes.
without giving too much away. She was hilarious. I'm like, here she goes again. I love me some Sailor. I'm like, she is that, when I was talking earlier for the listeners, she is that friend who says whatever's on her mind,
mm-hmm.
and she doesn't think before she says it. So
right.
you never know what she might do or where she may say and or do it. But you got to love her because she is who she is. And to know her is to accept her just the way she is.
Yes.
You know, and everybody has a Sailor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people
yes.
do. And if you don't find one, because
yes.
they always keep you on point.
Yes, yes. It will keep you from getting too serious about yourself.
Right. And she's not to the
yes.
point where she's annoying. She's just enough
yes.
to, like you said, it makes life fun.
Yes.
And so many of us have forgotten how to take things lightly. Everything
right.
is way too serious.
Right.
And the only thing that I will say about Ariel and her situation is God works in mysterious ways
yes.
and God has great power.
Mm-hmm.
And when our listeners get a copy of the book, you mm-hmm. will understand exactly what I'm saying.
Exactly, exactly. Because, and one of the good things, too, is that it lets you know that even if you're going through stuff and you can't do it by yourself, that there's somebody always praying for you.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, that's one of those people who I was right there with her, too.
Mm-hmm.
I could relate. And, mm-hmm. I mean, through all of it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's God can do great things. And clear shot, you know, sign of that was Ariel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah, so who was your favorite couple?
I did like, well, you know, Selah and hopefully in another book, maybe she'll hook up with Jeremiah, but who am I? I was really interested in that. As far as couples are concerned, I was really following Micah and Ariel.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get deeper into that and, you know, see how that played out. Because in my head,
mm-hmm.
I did 27,000 different scenarios. You know, you compare your life and you compare what you've heard from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, even with that couple, things did not evolve the way I expected them to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and of course, Kathleen and the professor. I'm more into the people who, you know, I want to see what's going to happen next.
Right.
You know, and what's his name? McIntyre. Was that his last name? Well, Mackenzie.
Yes. Mackenzie. Yes. You talking about the professor?
Yeah, the professor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just that's one of those you go, Kathleen. You know, it's one of those for me, each one of the couples had their own particular, I guess, merit in place.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you left the door wide open with a couple of them. So,
right.
I am like, okay, so when's the sequel coming? Will you be doing a sequel?
Yes. This book is, Covenant is the first of a saga.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I feel better now. As I told you when we were speaking before the show,
mm-hmm.
really left me with my mouth hanging open and wanting, you know, well, I won't say it like that because that might sound strange, but anyway, you left me in shock and awe.
Mm.
And now I'm waiting for more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, no, you can't end it here.
Mm-hmm.
I was mad with you.
Oh, that's good. That's exactly the reaction that I wanted.
I'm like, no, she did not end it here. I'm like, ooh. I said, I should cancel the show until she finishes the sequel.
Well,
she did not. And I said, now I told you that I've had a busy 2 weeks and I tried my best to get this book done. And when I got that book done, I'm like, oh, no, she did not.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
but it's going
You're
to be
You're making me smile. I'm so glad you had exactly the reaction that I was hoping to get from the reader from the book.
Well, to all the listeners, I'm telling you now, if you truly read this book, you're going to join my revolt so we can help Inez give her that push that she may need to finish the next two books. Because if you're like me, viva la revolution. She needs to get on this. Like, what? I was mad with her. No, you did not. But again, we have about 19 minutes left, so tell all of the listeners where they can pick up a copy of all of your work, especially Covenant.
Yes. Again, you can go to my website, and that's InezRiley.com, R-E-I-L-L-Y is my last name, .com. And you can click on the links, and it'll take you right to the Amazon site so that you can order the books from there. Or you can go straight to Amazon.com and get the paperback copy from there. Or you can get order it from the Kindle and get the e-version at the same time. You can also It's also available on the Barnes & Noble Nook. You can get it for your iPad or your iPod or any kind of e-reader version that you have. It can be purchased that way as well. Or you can go to Barnes & Noble and order the books from there.
And I'm telling you all, you will not be disappointed. Just know that you're going to be in the category with me, waiting for the sequel. Now,
yes.
When you're done making your current movie, you need to just start working on making Covenant. Okay? I'm letting you know now. You know,
yes.
By whatever means necessary, whatever we have to do to help you along. You need some actors, I'll get you some. You need me to play a role of six, I'll do that too.
Very good. Very good. We'll put it out there in the atmosphere. You know, watch God work that out.
But, oh, my goodness. You talk about a powerful book. And, you know, I'll run down some names for you all. We have, MJ and Garrison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Preston and Damaris, Micah and Ariel.
Then Sayla is a friend of the girls.
Sayla is just Sayla, yeah. She's the friend.
Yeah.
Sayla has her eyes on Jeremiah, more or less.
And then Mother Celester, who's the matriarch. Her
right.
family, and then Kathleen. And then you have Aaron.
And Tamu. Okay.
Yeah. And then you have Preston's brother and sister. And I'm going to draw a blank on their names. Aaron is one. And I can't think of the sister's name. Oh, man.
Oh, my. Well, at least I don't feel bad because I'm doing this from memory. Wait a minute.
Yes.
We're going to find this.
And he has Aaron has a twin sister who is married as well, and she has his son, and his name is David. And Aaron, what is his sister's name?
Oh, wow. Well, people, go get the book.
Yes.
Then you can.
Yes.
And then make sure you read it and tell us what the names are. Because I'm like, wait a minute.
Yes. Yes. And then, and his sister and her husband is also mentioned in the book. And again, the family ties are so good. You know, we have gone away sometimes even from having just dinner during the week with our families.
Right.
But the Lamberts have held on to a tradition of the Sunday dinner, where everybody still comes, you know, to Mom's house, and they sit down and they enjoy each other's company. They share with each other, and they're not, you know, they're not the family that sits there and tells all their business, but they're not holding anything back either. And so they share, and they're, you know, they're active, and they're, you know, they're living their lives with strong commitments and ties to the community and to their families.
And this is one of those books that take us back to a simpler time.
Right.
When
the sister's name is Anise.
Family.
Yes, the sister's name is Anise.
Anise. I'm like.
Yes. And yeah, and you know, and we understand that, you know, and as Christians, we do have to understand that not every relationship is going to take the same road that we would like it to take. And, you know, the same thing with Aaron and Tamu. You know, they've grown, but they have not grabbed a hold to that, you know, that commitment to keep themselves. But they love each other, and they're doing what couples do, and nobody's judging them to the point where they don't feel comfortable to come around and share with each other, you know, share with the family. Because sometimes we can get that way. We can get so wrapped up in our doctrine that we can't leave ourselves open to minister to those people who are not necessarily following the same things that we do.
Exactly. And, it's just a very real book. It's not like it's anything so outlandish or no one has accomplished anything that's, you know, unobtainable.
Mm-hmm.
They're very successful people in this book.
Mm-hmm.
But these are people who worked hard to obtain their success.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's an inspirational book because it's just, it's right there. I mean, they worked hard. They were encouraged to do well for the most part. And it says something about the friendships that were forged a long time ago. And these people remain friends throughout the years. And so many of us change their friends like they click unfriend on Facebook.
Exactly.
You know.
Yes.
But this talks about that bond where you have that connection. And some things in life are priceless. And the relationship that these characters shared is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And, you know, couples-wise, like I said, they all have their own special spot with me for whatever reason. But as far as the individuals, Ariel and Selah, they were my girls. I mean, and, of course, Nasara and... Oh, he was an N too. What's
Nasir.
Nasir.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for all of our listeners, if you want to know the story of Nasir and Nasara, get the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a story within a story.
Mm-hmm.
So again, get the book. Thank you so much to all of our guests in the chat room. We have Cass Ann, guest 27202, guest 27247, Minister Antoinette Marshall, TJ Dubb, Thank you to all of our guests in the chat room and also in our switchboard. Thank you all so much for joining us here this evening. Minister Antoinette Marshall in the chat room, she said, amen, tell the truth. This is what we need, the truth. So, you know, this is what we do, real people, real talk,
mm-hmm.
real hurt, real healing, real truth. Maybe I should add that to the tagline, too.
That would
because,
be good.
You know, so many times, again, as we spoke about earlier, so many people wear the mask instead of them bringing the truth. And, you
exactly.
know, you know, it's better to be disliked and wrong in the sight of man than in the sight of God.
Absolutely.
So put it out there. Walk by faith, and some people are not going to like it. But you know what? You need to worry about what you look like in the sight of God. Because
right.
what you look like to the sight of man is not what's going to get you into heaven. So you have to remember that. Stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you know. You share that knowledge. And you continue to walk the talk that you are sharing.
Mm.
Because many will scrutinize every move you make. And some are just not going to like you regardless.
Right.
But again, remember, it's all about what you look like in the sight of God. And I'll tell you, this lady here has got something to say, and I'm enjoying listening and reading. So I suggest you come jump on that bandwagon, and you pick up a copy of Covenant. And while you're at it, pick up All Other Ground. And what was the other book?
How to Taste It at the End of the Day.
How to Taste It at the End of the Day. I have to add that to my collection. But right now, Covenant, you said that's part of a 3-book.
It's 4 trilogy. Books. It's going to be 4 books.
Oh, it's 4 books.
Yes.
Ooh. That's even better. So when can we expect the next book?
Well, I'm in the editing stages of the next portion of the book, and that book is called Like a Roaring Lion. Mm-hmm. And once you get to the end of Covenant, you're introduced to a different kind of family. And we're going to introduce you to that family and how their lives get intertwined in such a way that it will leave you wondering how can you stand up underneath that kind of pressure with that kind of understanding, and how Preston is going to be involved. And God's going to put him intricately into this family's life, and then the news is revealed, and then his journey of forgiveness.
And it's going to be Preston.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, now you got me thinking. Like, wait a minute. Preston? Okay.
Mm-hmm. All you have to do is just remember the end.
Right.
And that's the family that we're going to introduce, and we're going to get them in there.
Okay.
And yes. So that should be done before the end of this year.
Alrighty then. So you know, just put down my address and you know, send it along. And so we can prepare to have you back again.
Yes.
And actually, welcome to all of the listeners, too, from the Sisters of WOW, which stands for Women of Wisdom and Worth. We had our inaugural meet and greet today. And we are starting a book club. And as a matter of fact, your book was introduced to the group earlier today.
Oh, and, very good. Thank you for that.
And, oh, you're welcome. It'll be at the author showcase that I'm doing as part of our nonprofit's charity drive this later on this summer. I take all of the books from my guests with me when I go on tour and do functions. Mm-hmm. So it's getting heavier now. But
yes.
I take all of the books with me. But today yours was with me, and I did present it to the group. So for our book club, we will probably be following the four-part series as one of our discussion. So most definitely, because, you know, there's so much you could do with Covenant, because you can really sit down and talk about and pick apart each character individually, mm-hmm. and then as a couple for those
yeah.
that are, you know, you really can. And I would love to have a discussion about that, to see what different people's perspectives and responses would be to each one of the characters. But,
yeah.
So once
and
again... Mm-hmm.
No, it would be, you know, even to the point of how a saved person can have such a close relationship and friendship with someone who is not necessarily of the same religious belief.
Right. And it's so much to it, but wow, time sure flies. We
mm-hmm.
have 2.5 minutes left, so I'm going to get ready to say goodnight to all of our guests, and thank you so much for joining me this evening on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. This has been my personal pleasure. And, wow, I loved this book. So pick up your copy of Covenant. It is available in many forms of e-books as well, so you don't have to wait for any of the stores to open tomorrow or Monday. You
That's
can get
right.
it next.
That's so, right. You can get it tonight.
You can go and get it right tonight. So do that. And I know
yes.
at least, you know, a couple people that are regulars in the chat room. I know you have Kindles. Go get it. It is a good book. It is a great book. And I will be talking. And if you all do get the book, I will sit down and have a special chat just for us to talk about the book.
That would be great.
And we will have Miss Inez come back. Sister Inez come back. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Minister Inez, isn't it?
That I'm not hung up on a title.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I like Sister Inez. But we have a little less
yeah.
than a minute, so if you all do that, let me know, and I will have a special show just for you all to discuss the book with her. So that, I think that would be great. So with that said, I'm going to have to say, unfortunately for tonight, thank you all so much for joining me here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I hope to see many of you tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time for our Sunday morning meditation, which is just 15 minutes of stress relief and release to help you forget all the bad things from this past week and to prepare you and get your armor ready for whatever may be coming your way this week. Sister Inez, thank you so much for joining me. This
you
has
are
been
welcome.
My pleasure.
Thank
and
you again for having me.
Oh, you are quite welcome, and just be ready that and know that you're coming back. And as soon as I can get together our book club, we're going to do a show just dedicated to Q&A. We're going to go through
oh,
these
good.
Characters. So good night, everyone. I am Maria Wall, your host. I will see you back here next week on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. Until then, I pray each and every one of you enough of whatever you need to help you make it through your week and beyond. Good night.
Good night.
Pretty baby, since you left me, I have been feeling oh so blue. I always thought that you would love me. I don't know what I should do. Do do ba ba da do da. Do do ba ba da do. Do do ba ba da do da. I don't know what I should do. I always thought that you would love me. I always thought that you